Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of them. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no man may buy or sell except one who has the mark of the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666.
You have behind me a chart showing you an outline of the book of Revelation. We're about in the middle of it, have been for last week and this week. Revelation chapter 13 deals with the unveiling of someone called Antichrist. There's a beast that comes out of the sea and another beast that comes out of the land. I believe these two and Satan form what Dr. Larkin calls on this chart here a satanic trinity. This man will be indwelt by Satan. Satan will empower him in a unique way. He will be worshipped as God, something Satan has wanted for 10,000 years, going all the way back to the story we read about in Isaiah 14, where Lucifer says, "I will be like the Most High." Well, he will have his day in the second half of this tribulation period, this time of judgment that God works together for his glory on the planet, where he will deal with the nations as to how they deal with Israel. If you haven't been with us, I believe the Church of Jesus Christ is going to be snatched away. I believe we're going to be gone. So you say, well, why study this stuff? Why study this traumatic, terrible time on the planet if it's not about us, if we're out of here? I think we should be concerned about what happens on this planet. After all, this is our home right now. But we should also be able to see what God is doing. As we come to worse and worse times, I believe there is a specific apostasy that will typify the end times. We saw that in the falling away, I believe, from 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 this morning in Sunday school. Timothy, Paul writes to Timothy about it. He says in the last days, perilous times will come. And he describes a rejection of God. There's going to be a specific apostasy, I believe, that God talks about there at the end times, end of the church age. And then there's going to be the man of sin, according to 2 Thessalonians. The man of sin will be revealed. The world will know this Antichrist. He will be elevated, and he will be worshipped as God, and he will accept, put himself in that place. Well, as we come to this, there's this Antichrist. It sounds like a fantastic story. Maybe someone should write a series about the end times. I wonder if it would sell, huh? The story is fantastic, not the Left Behind series. That's a good series. But the story is fantastic in that it's almost unbelievable. And if someone would come and talk about this Antichrist, I would think, ooh, this is just scare tactics. This is a conspiracy theory stuff. But you know, the Bible talks about this guy again and again. Jesus kind of refers to him in the Mount Olivet Discourse, mentioned in three Gospels. The old John, as he wrote 1 John, he says the spirit of Antichrist is out there, but when the, and he specifies a particular person, he talks about that Antichrist. Paul does here in 2 Thessalonians as he addresses this church. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, he talks about a specific person that will come. And so there seems to be, and then we're going to look in the book of Daniel. Turn with me to the book of Daniel today. Old Testament prophet that is, I think, the key to understanding biblical prophecy is Daniel. There is an event called the Abomination of Desolation. It's mentioned in all three of the Gospels that have the Mount Olivet Discourse. It's mentioned, if I remember right, four times in the book of Daniel. It's there several times. So there seems to be a person that is talked about again and again and again in Scripture, and an event or two that is referred to again and again and again in Scripture. So this fantastic story of a man emerging who will rule the world as Hitler wanted to, who will be indwelt by Satan and worshipped as God, something Satan desires to have. It's a fantastic story, but I believe it's a true story. I believe it is something that God has seen that will happen on this planet and that God knows will happen and God is going to allow it to happen, that he may be lifted up, that he may be glorified. Daniel chapter 7. Here in this passage, we have four beasts come out of the sea. In Daniel chapter 7, these different beasts represent kingdoms. We find later in the book and from history that the kingdoms that they represent are the Babylonian kingdom that Daniel served under, the Medo-Persian kingdom that would come. And history tells us about Darius and how that he dominated everything from modern-day Turkey to India. And that was the center of the world at that time. And everybody sent tribute to Darius. When he would go attack a country, say Greece, he would take hordes. Hundreds of thousands of people would be part of his army. And he would just devour the landscape as he moved this great army around the world. He was truly a world leader to be feared. And he's pictured by this ram in Daniel chapter 8. And then comes Greece. We all know the story of Alexander the Great. 333 BC, this man decides he's going to wreak revenge against the Medes for what Darius did to his father's generation. And God empowers Alexander, or allows Alexander to, with an army of 50,000, to defeat Tyre, Sidon, people who had never been defeated before, people that Darius couldn't defeat. And in an amazing way, he goes to Egypt and then he heads to Babylon, and peace entreaties come from Darius. But no, Alexander is undeterred and he keeps on going and he crushes Babylon. He crushes the Medo-Persian Empire and he dies of probably venereal diseases and a wound that he received and alcoholism and just a real fast lifestyle. He dies at the peak of his power somewhere over heading toward the Orient on the east side of India. 10 years. That's how long he was the ruler of the world, or that's how long he was powerful, from 333 to 323 BC. And then history tells us that following that there was another people that rose. And we know them, of course, the Romans. Following the Greek, they the 100 years before Jesus Christ, the Roman Senate puts together a system of laws that rules their little peninsula compared to the world, Italy. And in time, that spreads from Rome, and it follows the same path of Alexander the Great. And so that the known world is under the Roman legions, and that spreads to Africa and into much of what is today modern Europe, is under the power of Rome. So we see these four beasts, these four kingdoms, and they mirror a lot of things that Daniel talks about, or that Daniel sees in Daniel chapter 7. Now, something happens with this fourth beast. We'll see this in Daniel chapter 7, and we're going to start with verse 8 this morning. And as he sees this vision, now I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them. And my theme this morning is Antichrist. Last Sunday we were in Revelation 13 that was talked about, it was read this morning by Kurt. Sunday school, 2 Thessalonians 2, same theme. We're just going to see from another place in Scripture to validate and to flesh out more things about this guy Antichrist. Okay, that's my agenda today. Another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there, in this horn, were eyes like the eyes of a man. and a mouth speaking pompous words. Notice he comes out of the Roman Empire, and he is like a man. So this is different than just a horn, okay? Skip with me down to verse 15. And I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body after he saw this. The visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by. He's got a heavenly perspective. Maybe it's an angel. And asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Those great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. That's going to be the end, Daniel. All these world kingdoms are going to be destroyed. God is going to be uplifted. God is going to rule forever and ever. And then Daniel says, then I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces and trampled the residue with its feet. And the ten horns which were on its head, and the other horn which came up before which three fell, namely that horn which had the eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came. And judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High. And the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Daniel was especially focusing on this little horn. Here was this terrible, weird-looking beast. A fantastic thing with these heads and horns and eyes. And out of this one particular horn, this little one came up. And it broke off others. And it became the little horn with the big mouth, I call him. He becomes a very arrogant thing, and he, this person, it seems to take on the life of a people, this person begins to persecute God's people. He begins to persecute Christians until the time comes when God says, enough, and then he is crushed, and the saints, notice, the saints possess the kingdom. We're going to see this in Revelation 19. So, he gets an explanation, verse 23. The fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. Rome was truly that. Alexander the Great left much of the world as it was. As he conquered people, he would go from one place to another, and he would leave behind their rulers, their language, their culture, and marrying it with Greece. And so the world became a Greece language, and Greek, in the New Testament, you find this phrase, the Greeks and the barbarians. If you were an educated person, you spoke Greek, and you adapted it much to the Greek culture. But he kind of infiltrated. He didn't say, you're going to do it this way. Along came Rome. And Rome said, no, whoever was in charge before, not anymore. You're going to use our system of building buildings. You're going to use our system of bringing in water. You're going to use our system of laws, and we're going to put somebody in charge in your place. We will decide whether or not your king has any authority or not. Truly, they trampled the world, broke it in pieces. In some ways, the work of Rome is not done. In that we, if you study government, if you study civics, you find that much of our government today is based on ancient Roman, yes, Greek precedent, but Roman law, the idea of a rule of law as opposed to the rule of a man is a Roman idea. And so the democratization of Iraq and Afghanistan that our country is facilitating today, in some ways it's Rome still having its impact on the world through us. Even the capitalism that is spreading in China in some ways is Rome spreading throughout the world yet today. Chapter 7, 24. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them, an 11th, and he shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. There's ten. There were on the image that we saw in Daniel chapter 2, at the very end of that fourth kingdom, there were ten toes, all right? So some people, there's ten horns here, there's ten toes in that image. Maybe a better is, as you listened to Kurt read this morning from Revelation 13, we saw ten crowns on that beast that comes out. So there's ten somethings coming out of Rome. As I read that and thought about it this week, I cogitated a little bit, and I said, I wonder if that should be ten in succession. you know, chronological, the first kingdom, second kingdom, third kingdom. And so I went to my commentaries to see if any of the dispensational commentaries, and I skimmed probably eight different guys, see if any of them tried to put a chronology together, and to a man, they did not. So my great idea was a bad idea. Overwhelmingly, the commentary said that there will be at the end of this dispensation that the Antichrist will assume control of a 10 coalition federation, if you will. That there will be a group of 10 that he will assume control of, and then he'll destroy three of those. Well, there's been a lot of speculation over the years. I remember as a kid, the European Common Market, I think, maybe had about 9 countries. And then it got to 10, and there was a lot of people in my grandpa's era that said, "Up, that's it, the European Common Market, that's going to be the, that will be the coalition that will come out of the ashes of the old Holy Roman Empire." And that was what I was taught in the 70s and 80s. Now, the problem is that in 89, the wall fell between East and Western Europe, and today the European Union has over 20 countries that are part of it. Now, if you're a student of history, you know that the lines have been drawn and redrawn in Europe in the succeeding generations, that the great wars of this last 100 years have redrawn all the borders in Europe. So a European Common Market, some have said, and then you speculate, well, what about the UN? Maybe it's a Security Council, and when they expand that. What about, and here's the one that I had most recently, a few years back, I thought, I bet it's the economic powers. After all, as you read Revelation and you come to chapter 18, you find that the Antichrist will assume control of the world's economic. We see that at the end of chapter 13 with the 666. In Revelation 18, he talks about all the merchants of the world. So I thought maybe it's this G. Remember, it was like G7 and then G8. Well, back in September, that got blown out of the water. Now it's called the G20. You know, because they've got 19 powerhouse ministry financiers that are all part of this group. And then the 20th is the European Union. They pull in that guy. So I don't see it in the world today. But at the end of the church dispensation, at the end of this period of time, at the end times, I truly believe there will be a coalition of some kind that will elevate the Antichrist, that he will assume that power. Daniel 7:25, "And he shall, this Antichrist, speak pompous words against the Most High. He shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law." He wants nothing to stay the same. He wants to change everything. I don't think I'm going to make any comment there. I'll just leave it there. He wants to change everything. "Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time." Sound familiar? 5 times in Revelation 11, 12, and 13, we see a period of 3.5 years. And now in a parallel time or a parallel description of this Antichrist, 42 months was the Antichrist's dominant authority, according to the text that Kurt just read from Revelation 13, and now time, times, and a half. 3.5 years could be represented here. "But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him." After 3.5 years of this Antichrist persecuting believers, persecuting God's people, I believe Israel especially will be persecuted. We see that Jesus comes back or somebody destroys him. The people, the saints, the people of the Most High will destroy this person. Let's move on to the next chapter. We'll see this again, this guy again. In Daniel chapter 8. This time, instead of 4 beasts, Daniel sees 2, a ram and a goat. At the end of the vision, he's told that the ram is the Medo-Persian Empire and that the goat is Alexander the Great. I want to start again at verse 8, Daniel chapter 8, verse 8. "Therefore, the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken." This would be Alexander the Great. And in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. We know from history that when Alexander the Great died, that his four generals took over the kingdom. One went north, east, west, south. And out of one of them came a little horn, out of one of these four divisions, which grew exceedingly great toward the south and toward the east and toward the glorious land. That would have to be Israel. And it grew up to the hosts of heaven, and it cast down some of the hosts and some of the stars to the ground. Abraham was told his children would be like the stars of the heaven. Joseph, remember, in his dream, had the sun and the moon and 11 other stars worshiping him. So in that dream that God gave him, his brother, the children of Israel, were like stars. He cast down and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. And by him, the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices. And he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. And I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, "How long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot?" And he said to me, "For 2,300 days, then the sanctuary will be cleansed." We can see this fulfillment in history. Now, here's a problem as you study this. In Daniel chapter 7, this Antichrist dude comes out of the fourth beast, which is Rome. In this case, he's coming out of the second beast in this vision, but this vision is only about Medo-Persian Empire and Greece. So here this little horn, or this horn that speaks great words and seems to jive with the guy that we saw in Daniel 7, this time he's coming out of the Greek Empire, so there's something different going on here. Well, this little horn this time goes towards Israel, and notice he exalts himself as prince. Well, between verse 8 and verse 9, history would show us that there's a 130-year gap. And verses 9 through 14 describe something that's already happened in history. It's the life and times of a man by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes. About 178 BC, this guy is born into one of the generals' ruling lines, one of the generals that descends from Alexander the Great. As a child, he's imprisoned in Rome. His older brother sets him free, and he comes back, and in time, Antiochus Epiphanes becomes the king of that area of Syria in Israel. Because of his upbringing and baptized in Greek culture, he is an ardent follower of Zeus and Olympian things. And he tries to force everybody to worship Zeus the way he worshiped Zeus, making octagonal buildings, bringing pigs in for sacrifice. As he does this, the Jews are not happy at all. They had done their time in Babylon. They have rebuilt their temple. They're sacrificing in the temple in Israel. And they fight against him, Antiochus Epiphanes, by evil conspiring with the high priest's brother, a traitor by the name of Jason. By conspiring with this person, Antiochus Epiphanes gets access to the temple. And there in the temple, he brings in his sacrifice to Zeus, and he desecrates the temple in Jerusalem, 165 BC, or just before that, 167 BC. He desecrates the temple in Jerusalem by sacrificing a pig there on the altar to the god Zeus. The high priest pukes. He is just completely grossed out by the pig being in the altar, on the altar, and being sacrificed in such way. Well, Antiochus Epiphanes represses the Jews, and so the question is asked, how long? 2,300 days are specifically mentioned. 165 BC, along comes a guy by the name of Judas Maccabeus. You've heard of the Maccabean Revolt. And Judas Maccabeus, the hammer, Judas the hammer, mounts an insurrection against Antiochus Epiphanes and defeats him, chases him out of the temple courtyard. But now they don't have any oil to light the lights. They have just a little bit, and they get the lights going, and miraculously the lights and the candlesticks in the temple stay lit for 8 days. Today we celebrate, or the Jews celebrate, Hanukkah. from that event that happened at 165 BC. So there is a picture here from Daniel chapter 8 that has already taken place. We can see this. But there's so many things that are similar. This guy, Antiochus Epiphanes, seems to be a type of the Antichrist. The way he acts, the way he behaves is so much similar. And Jesus takes the abomination of desolation, or that phrase from Daniel chapter 8, and Jesus talks about it in the Mount Olivet Discourse and says, when you see this, then know. So the Antichrist seems to be figured by Antiochus and seems to do some of the same things that Antiochus does. Well, as Daniel chapter 8 moves on, verses 15 to 19, I'm not going to read them, maybe you look at them another time, to me look like the halftime blowing that I said that the big angel does in Revelation chapter 10, and also that Michael the prince will do in Daniel chapter 12. So let's skip down to right after that and see if we can see the Antichrist again. Verse 21, and the male goat is the kingdom of Greece, and the large horn that is between his eyes is the first king. As for the four broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. They weren't as powerful as Alexander. In the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise. And I believe from here on we're talking Antichrist. And the reason I think this is down at the end it says that he shall arise against the prince of princes. Well, that would be Jesus. And Antiochus did not do that. And it says he shall be broken without human means. That didn't happen to Antiochus either. Judas Maccabeus was very human. So let's come back and read this. I think now that Antiochus figures the Antichrist, but now the description here forward, I believe, is Antichrist. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when transgressions have reached their fullness, verse 23, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Well, we know he's indwelt by Satan, according to 2 Thessalonians 2. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. And he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even arise against the prince of princes. But he shall be broken without human means. So Daniel chapter 8 speaks of this event that's already taken place, Antiochus Epiphanes, but it seems to also, along with Daniel chapter 7, foreshadow the same guy that's coming that's going to be a world ruler yet. The Antichrist is also talked about in Daniel chapter 9, verses 26 and 27. For the sake of time, I'm going to skip to Daniel 11. Come with me to Daniel 11, and we're going to start reading at verse 31. Daniel 11 is a strange chapter. In Daniel chapter 10, Daniel prays and asks God to explain these visions to him. He's had these fantastic visions in chapter 7, chapter 8, and chapter 9. And so in Daniel 10, Daniel's praying and says, God, I know the 70 years is about up and that we're going back to Jerusalem, but I also know that there's going to be all these strange things happening. What's going on here? And God says, okay, I'm going to tell you. And he sends this angel down to tell Daniel what's going on. And in the first half of Daniel chapter 11, he goes through, I believe, the Seleucids and the Ptolemies, these generals that rule Egypt and Syria, that are descended from Alexander the Great, and that they fight back and forth, descended not genetically but politically. And they fight back and forth across Israel. And when I was in Bible college back in the 70s, long time ago, we studied the book of Daniel, and my professor, Joe Combs, got up and he says, Daniel chapter 11, I have no idea what this is about. Daniel 12, that's how much I got. I've since read in commentaries, and there are many brave men who have tried to explain historically all the events of Daniel chapter 11. And I read one guy and I go, oh, that makes sense. And then I read another guy who says something completely different. And quite frankly, I am not the historian, nor have I invested the time to tell you I understand Daniel chapter 11 up through about verse 31. When you come to verse 31, though, something different. There begins to be a change that mirrors, I believe, exceedingly closely the story that we see in Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 8. So I think somehow we've come to Antiochus by the time we get to verse 31 of Daniel chapter 11. Now, we're going to switch to Antichrist again, like we did in chapter 8. And the reason I believe we're going to do that is when you come to the end of chapter 11, chapter 12 starts with the middle of the tribulation. Because it mirrors what happens in Revelation chapter 10. It mirrors the midtime. So chapter 12 is the middle of the tribulation, so I think Antichrist has to show up somewhere along the line. Let's start with verse 31 and read. And the forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. They're going to go in and defeat the Jews that would be defending the temple. And the place, then they shall take away the daily sacrifice and place there the abomination of desolation. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. He's going to seduce Jews to fight against the godly Jews. He's going to pay money to do whatever he can to wreck his way. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and shall carry out great exploits. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many. Yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help. But many shall join with them by intrigue. And some of those of understanding shall fall to refine them, purify them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. Notice the mention of time. Sounds awful familiar. Sounds again like Revelation chapter 10. Sounds like he's saying, okay, there's something to pay attention to here. I believe that these verses, yes, they picture the Maccabeus versus Antiochus at 165 BC. I think they picture the wicked Antiochus, the mad and his Zeus theology, versus Judas Maccabeus and the militant right Jews who try to restore the temple. I think that is being talked about here. But there also seems to be a lot in common with what we think will happen, or what I believe will happen, between the Antichrist someday and the converts of the 144,000. That there will be those who are knowledgeable, and there are those who will fight against wickedness, and that there are those who will, in that very, very, very wicked day of the Antichrist, will insist on doing the right things. By the time we get to verse 36, I think the shift has been made by this mention of time in verse 35. I think we've jumped from 165 BC to 2000, whatever it's going to be, when the Antichrist is the ruler and we're coming close to the middle of the tribulation. Now listen to the Antichrist, or him again. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished. For what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, and anything that's traditional that he's been taught about deity, he's going to blow that aside, nor the desire of women. Some say, this guy's a homosexual. Maybe that's what it's talking about. Maybe it's just talking about the fact that, you know, you go to a lot of churches and there's more women than men there. That maybe the desire of women would be the desire that's in the heart of a woman to have good things. Revelation, Romans chapter 1, as it talks about the total depravity of man, says, even their women. So maybe that's what it's talked about here. I'm not sure. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers nor the desire of women, nor regard any God. See, the context is God. For he shall exalt himself above them all. He doesn't regard any God because he himself wants to be worshipped as God. But in their place, he shall honor a god of fortresses. You know, we watch a lot of stuff on TV today. May the force be with you. You know? And it's imaginary. I understand it's imaginary. And quite frankly, I really like watching the Harry Potter stuff. Haven't read any Harry Potter books, but I enjoy those movies. But you know what? We need to be very, very careful as we work with contemporary fiction, that we point out to our young people that it is contemporary fiction. Because here, this God is going to exalt the God, and he shall honor a God of fortresses. Oh, there's powers out there. I believe there's a power in the universe. I believe that there's a power that's in all of us. This is nothing new under the sun. This is just old-fashioned garbage pantheism reinvented, Hinduism given another face, and we call it contemporary modern thinking. It is nothing but against God is what it is. He shall honor a God of fortresses, and a God which his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. Remember the image of Revelation 13. Thus he shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign God, which he shall acknowledge, advance in its glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land with gain. Again, you compare this to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and we see that these guys... This guy will exalt himself. As you go on in this chapter, we find that he conquers kingdoms, but and he's given power to conquer, but not in the area where I believe Petra is. And then Daniel 12 speaks of the end. And again, 3.5 years are mentioned specifically in Daniel chapter 12. I'm done. What do we get out of all this? I've told you a lot of history. Those of you, some of you are going, you know, how can we apply this to us today? Well, as I say, you can see the end coming. And as you see people trying to go against God, people trying to change what has been God's, take note, the end is coming. Paul told Timothy, things are going to wax worse and worse. Don't expect them to love the people of God. Jesus said, if they killed me, what are they going to do to you? If they killed me, what are they going to do to the people who follow me? It's going to be similar. So that's something we can take from this. Know this, that this world is not a friend of grace. As Reagan pointed out, that old Isaac Watts hymn, is this vile world a friend of grace to take me on to God? No, I shall fight. No, know this, the devil is not dead. He is alive and he is well, and he's in heaven accusing us today, and his kingdom, his high day, his high watermark is not done yet. And I think he knows this, if he would listen, if he would pay attention to the word of God, which I know he doesn't. I think there's a second truth that we can maybe apply to our hearts today. Several times in the book of Daniel, we find this phrase, the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whoever he wills. The Most High rules in the kingdom of men and he gives it to whoever he wills. Know this, God is not dead. God is God. He is not finished. He is not done. And in the middle of the tribulation, when Satan is kicked out of heaven and he comes down to the planet and the devil goes down to the hell and unleashes his demons, Revelation chapter 9, and the Antichrist erects a vision of himself, an image of himself that can do miracles, and the whole world is chaotic. The whole world's economy collapses. People are killing each other out of just fear of everything, and the Antichrist is ruling ruthlessly this planet and destroying all that will oppose him. And the two witnesses and the 140,000 keep preaching, and Antichrist breathes fire out against them in any way he can. And this world is a terrible, terrible place to live. Much worse than today. We haven't seen anything like it's going to be then. Never. God is not going to be in heaven going, oh no, now what should I do? The Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whoever he will. God is not done. He's not done with you either. The Most High rules. He's not done with you. Because he is God. He's not finished.